This is a debate on the desirability or otherwise of tax cuts, featuring William Rusher, William Buckley's editor. It was recorded in Boston.
Can take everything from you. Some public opinion polls show a lot of interest in cutting taxes, but little interest in cutting services. Others think that there can be a cut in taxes without any significant cut in services, that a tax cut will force the government to be more efficient. Still others, while willing to go on paying high taxes, want some kind of reform to make sure they're paying what they see as their fair share and to be sure that their tax dollar is buying them something they care about, say safer streets, better education, or cleaner air. And now to tonight's question. Mr. Rusher, the floor is yours.
To a large extent, the activity of government consists of taking money from the people in the form of taxes and spending it on various more or less necessary projects. But in a democracy like ours, the special interests, like Mr. Schlossberg's big labor, that want government to spend money on their projects, can bring more pressure to bear on Congress than those who are trying to defend the general interests of the taxpayers. That is why your taxes have risen steadily, year after year, until today. The average American must work from January to May every year just to pay what government demands of his or her taxes before starting to earn money for himself and his family. Sooner or later, of course, the goose that lays all those golden eggs is going to stop trying so hard. And there is evidence that it is beginning to do just that. Our current tax rates are so high that they are actively discouraging economic growth in this country. Our chronic inflation is pushing more middle-income workers into the high tax brackets and more low-income workers into the middle tax brackets, so that everybody's real income gets taxed more highly every year. The answer is to lower the tax rates and thereby restore incentive. And I call first upon a man who proposes to do exactly that, Congressman Jack Kemp. Mr. Kemp is Congressman from the 38th Congressional District of New York, the Buffalo area. Congressman Kemp, what's wrong with our present tax policy?
Well, it is too steeply graduated and thereby has a bias in the tax code against the worker, the saver, the investor, the producer, those men and women of ambition that produce the goods and services that make an economy healthy, create the jobs, provide the opportunity for people to meet their own needs. Basically, if you tax something, you get less of it. And generally speaking, if you subsidize something, you get more of it. In America today, we're taxing workers, savers, investors, producers, and entrepreneurs, and we're subsidizing unemployment, non-work, welfare, debt, borrowing, consumption, leisure, idleness, and mediocrity. You get more of that which is subsidized. What I believe has to be done is to get the rates down to where you've done, as you said, Bill, restore incentive for both workers and savers.
Well, what about the workers in your own district? Is their incentive disturbed by the taxes they have?
Well, this is one of the reasons why I introduced the bill in the first place, and I did so 2 years ago. It is not just a political gimmick. It was done in a time of very severe recession in New York State, as well as the slow rate of growth in the United States. We've got both inflation and recession at the same time, something the economists told us could never happen. It is here. And one of the reasons I believe is that as inflation steadily pushes people up into higher tax brackets, it reduces the reward for working and saving, thus discouraging the output of our U.S. economy. So the workers in Buffalo or Western New York or New York State or in the country, basically for the last 10 years, because of the steeply graduated nature of the tax code, have been working without an increase in their after-tax incomes. For instance, the brackets are so steeply graduated that a 6% increase in a worker's wages raises their taxes 9 to 10%. I think that is unnecessary and untenable.
What would your bill do concretely? What are its provisions?
Well, basically, the Kemp-Roth bill or the Roth-Kemp bill, depending whether you're in Delaware or New York, lowers all of the federal income tax rates on both the personal side and the corporate side. About 90% of the tax rate reduction is aimed at individual taxpayers because we think this is the most important place to restore a healthy investment and saving and work climate. It reduces the bottom rates by about 50%, and slowly works on up right up to the top bracket. It reduces the top rates about 25%. It was modeled after what President Kennedy did in 1964-5 fiscal period. It took President Johnson to get it through the Congress, but it was President Kennedy's strategy to get the economy moving again.
Does it have?
And he lowered the tax rates by 30% in 1 year.
And does it have any provisions that have to do with corporate taxes?
I'm sorry, could you?
Does it have any provisions to do with corporate taxes?
It lowers the corporate rate to 3 points, from 48 to 45%, something that President Carter, both Democrats and Republicans, all pretty much agree needs to be done to restore a healthy business climate as well.
Now, as I understand it, what you propose to do is lower the tax rate. Is this a tax cut?
Yeah, the attack on this is that it is going to be a vast tax cut and lose revenue.
Let me ask in general, what is the effect going to be on revenue?
Well, we're not lowering the tax revenues. We're lowering the tax rates to increase the reward for working and saving and investing, thereby expanding the output of our economy, increasing the GNP, leading to a creation of jobs, reducing the transfer payments or the welfare transfer payments that today are eating up close to $150 to $190 billion a year. So I don't know whether or not the revenues will be fed back into the economy quick enough to finance it just by added revenue, but I do know this, Bill, the additional increase in GNP, the growth of the economy, plus the increased savings that will occur in our economy will more than anything else allow us to finance any short-term deficit without having the money supply expanding, thus leading to the inflation that was mentioned as a threat to civilization.
Thanks. I have no further
questions. Thank you. Mr. Salford, some questions for Representative.
Congressman Kemp, 6 days ago you said to your colleagues in the Congress, and you said it again tonight, that your proposal is patterned after the Kennedy tax cut of 1964.
Yes, sir.
President Kennedy said he wanted to cut taxes in the right way at the right time. Certainly we all did. I want to make certain for a moment that you and I are talking about the same time when we discuss such an important economic move as the cutting of taxes in these dimensions. Inflation in 1964, when the Kennedy tax bill was passed, was something in the neighborhood of 1.4%. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And today, is it not at 7.8% and growing at a double-digit rate?
It is probably higher.
The federal budget deficit in when the Kennedy tax cut was passed was negligible then, wasn't it? About $0.2 billion?
No, the federal deficit in 1963 was $5 billion. The federal deficit in 64 was $7 billion. And in the $100 billion budget, that's a significant concern that many people had, that inflation would be a problem, although I agree it was not as...
Wasn't the $50 billion deficit we have today.
No, but we only had a $100 billion budget. So a $7 billion deficit in a $100 billion budget is of great concern. In fact, many conservatives voted against Kennedy because they were afraid of inflation.
I realize that. Now, we're afraid of inflation now, Congressman Kemp.
I'm glad to hear it.
Let me ask you something. Mortgage rates. Weren't they about half of what they are now? And interest rates, too, weren't they about half of what they are now at that time?
Interest rates were lower, much lower, yes, sir.
Yeah, about half. And we were just coming off three recessions, were we not?
We were not coming out of a recession. The reason
we had just finished three recessions, let me say it that way.
We were in a recession. And President Kennedy said the main roadblock to a full employment economy without inflation is the heavy burden of taxes on the American people. All I'm suggesting, Mr. Schlossberg, is that taxes are as high or higher today than they were under President Kennedy.
Congressman Kemp, let me ask you. You said to your congressional colleagues that you wanted a tax cut of similar magnitude as the Kennedy tax cut. Isn't your tax cut three times the size of the 64 cut and double the amount in terms of percentage of the GNP?
No, it's not.
Well, that's
it's less.
My figure.
As a percentage of federal revenue, the President Kennedy's tax cut was 10% of federal revenue. The Kemp-Roth bill is only 7% of federal
Let's talk about your bill a little bit. The Joint Committee on Taxation tells us that your bill would leave us with a federal deficit of $103 billion in 1982. Your own projections, which you say are very hopeful, predict a federal deficit of $64 billion. We're going to have big deficits, Congressman. I think that's true, is it not?
Because
under your
of
own
because of the slow growth of the economy.
For whatever reason.
Encourage the growth of the economy.
With your tax cut, we will still have a $64 billion.
Sure.
How do we deal with that? Does your bill tell us where we cut the federal budget to make up for that deficit?
No, you just have to hold the growth of the federal budget and not let it grow faster than the ability of the private sector of the economy to finance the deficit, A. And B, as I mentioned in my answer to Mr. Rusher, savings of the American people in the private sector will so expand that you can finance any short-term deficit without the fear of inflation.
Is it not true that when you come to cut the federal budget, you know, as well as these people in this room, that certainly the majority of the federal budget is uncontrollable, that the defense budget and so on, you're not going to cut the defense budget of $100 billion that's given to business. You want to cut, and tell me if I'm right, Social Security, because these are the people you mentioned, transfer payments, welfare payments,
you're putting words in my mouth. I do not advocate cutting Social Security. The greatest threat to the Social Security system in America today is the slow rate of growth of our economy. If we don't start expanding the tax base, as that advocated by the Kemp-Roth bill, the Social Security system will be in more severe trouble than it is today.
We'll come back to you in a minute, Mr. Rusher.
Congressman Kemp, do the distinctions cited by Mr. Schlossberg between the economic situation in 1963 and the situation today prove, in your opinion, that the same sort of tax rate reduction would have wildly different consequences? Does it follow that the result would be different because of those differences?
I have never said, Mr. Rusher, that the conditions today are exactly the same as they were in the early 60s. But the fear of inflation was great in the early 60s. As I mentioned, my own party, embarrassingly enough, voted against the tax rate reductions. This is a bipartisan strategy. It is not partisan. There are liberal Democrats and conservative Republicans who believe that the way to restore a healthy economy is to put incentive back in the economy for working and saving. But the conditions are much like the Kennedy period because of the slow growth of our economy. And he said, as I pointed out earlier in the answer to the question to Mr. Schlossberg, the main roadblock to a full employment economy without inflation is the heavy burden of taxes on the backs of the American people. He said the time has come to remove it. I agree. I think the time has come to remove it because they're higher today than they were under President Kennedy in 1963.
Mr. Schlossberg, one final question for Representative Kemp.
You claim that the GNP, the gross national product, will skyrocket $160 billion in 1 year. I assume your evidence is that the GNP grew by 74% between 62 and 69. Is that correct?
I didn't put a static figure on the growth of the GNP.
But isn't that the basis of your projection of growth?
No, the basis of my projection is that the GNP will grow. You will also increase the saving rate of the American people. And as Professor Heller pointed out in testimony before the Joint Economic Committee, when President Kennedy cut the tax rates, it financed itself in the very first year of the cut.
But as you have admitted, those times were very different, Congressman Kemp.
Thank you. Congressman Kemp, thank you very much for joining us on The Advocate.
Call is my next witness, Mr. Wendell W. Gunn. Mr. Gunn is a commercial banker in New York City. Mr. Gunn, in connection with the Kemp-Roth bill, there's been a lot of discussion of the so-called Laffer curve. Could you explain, simply for my sake, if nobody else's, what it is?
Well, Laffer curve is just a graphical representation of an old fact that there are two tax rates which will get you the same level of federal revenues, a high tax rate on a low level of production or a low tax rate on a high level of production. The extreme example is that at 0% tax rate, you get zero revenues because no tax is levied. And at 100% tax rate, you get zero revenues because either all economic activity ceases or it simply takes place out of the sight of the tax collector.
What's the practical application?
Well, the practical application of that is that it points out that there is a danger in having tax rates too high, because all you'll do when you get into a certain range of tax rates is discourage investment or drive it offshore. and end up getting less revenues in the process. It's the old law of diminishing returns applied to tax rates.
Can you give us an example of some governmental entity that has had this experience?
Well, I guess a prime example would be New York State, who on top of a progressive federal tax schedule has a progressive state income tax schedule. And during the last 4 or 5 years, New York State has lost about 700,000 jobs, and it becomes more attractive to go someplace in the Sun Belt so that you can keep more of what you produce.
What is your reply to the charge that the Kemp-Roth bill will contribute to inflationary pressures?
Well, I disagree with that charge. I think it's based on the old assumption that inflation is caused by too much money chasing too few goods, or too much demand, as it were. And I think that trying to fight inflation by decreasing demand is a bit barbaric. Kemp-Roth seeks to fight inflation by increasing the supply of goods.
But critics of Kemp-Roth say that production, the increase in supply, can't be increased fast enough, and the result will just pump more dollars into the economy and cause inflation.
Well, then my question to those critics would be, what kind of production can't respond that quickly? I think there's an assumption there that increased production means more typewriters and more paper clips and more automobiles. But businessmen invest in research and development to produce better typewriters, better paper clips, and better automobiles. And the other thing is that we're not just talking about quantity. And there are a lot of goods and services that are produced. And they're also saying that it takes 3 years to bring a plant on stream. But we don't wait 3 years and the plant drops out of the sky. Somebody produces that plant during those 3 years, and that plant is part of that production.
Since Kemp-Roth proposes to cut tax rates, some people are afraid the government revenues are going to drop sharply and government expenditures will have to be cut. What do you say to that?
Well, I think that Kemp-Roth approach gives us a method for affording the kind of cut in government expenditures. Because the government expenditures for social programs to take care of people who are out of work, they're only there because people are out of work. But if you restore incentive to the private economy, then we'll be better able to take care of people who absolutely cannot work by having a healthy private economy that employs those who can.
Thank you, Mr. Schlossberg. Your cross-examination of Mr. Gunn.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Gunn.
Good evening.
This is a short yes or no question. I just want to ask you if you and Congressman Kemp are together. He disowned the Laffer curve, said it was that his bill does not rest on it. Do you disagree with him there?
I can tell you that even if revenues did not go up, if you drew people off the welfare rolls and into work in the private sector, you could reduce the need.
I respectfully suggest that's not an answer to my question.
Let's go back once more.
We'll go on to the next question because he's not going to answer that one. You say that automatic cuts in welfare and unemployment will take place because of this booming economy you're going to produce through these massive tax cuts.
Yes.
Now, 90% of our welfare payments go to mothers and infant and small children. Have you got a place in this new society to put these children to work? Never mind the child labor laws. Where will they work? Where will the children, the infants of the dependent mothers work?
The best thing we can do for a poor child is have an environment where his father or his mother can get a job.
I agree with that. Don't you think we have a different kind of unemployment today? Don't you think that our unemployment today is more chronic, minority, untrained, young people, unskilled? The skilled workers are in very short demand, as you know. This unemployment is chronic. Which jobs do you offer them? The unskilled, the young, the minority.
There are only two kinds of unemployment. That's people who can't work because they are handicapped or aged, and other people who can't work because there's not enough incentive for somebody to hire them.
Let's talk about the new style productivity you predict. No more new products, no more giant factories producing so much goods. Production for use is what I understood you to say. If we built cars like we traditionally built homes in this country, a Ford automobile would sell for $100,000. Is the kind of economy you envision under Kemp Roth an economy that we can live with, where unskilled, undereducated, unemployed young people are going to build $100,000 cars?
Well, when
and
the
do R&D?
Well, when the businessman gets ready to evaluate an investment, he estimates the cost and the revenue, and the cost includes the cost of possible training of unskilled workers. And if the returns are good enough, he undertakes to train them himself.
You and I both know that's not done overnight. Now, you're a loan officer.
That's where I work.
You're a loan officer at Chase Manhattan. Surely you know about very high interest rates, how tight money discourages growth and investment. What do you think the Federal Reserve Board would do when faced with a massive deficit, which even Congressman Kemp has admitted will come with Kemp Roth?
I think that the major component of high interest rates is a high expectation for inflation. If you decrease the incentive for producing goods and at the same time gun the money supply, you'll have that inflation and high interest rates.
Well, let me tell you what I think they'll do. William Miller, the chairman of the Federal Reserve System, who's going to be in for 14 years, says that inflation is the most serious problem. He says, he's a self-made millionaire, by the way, he says, Kemp Roth is unwise, highly inflationary, and will create huge deficits. How high do you think he will raise the interest rates to combat those deficits?
Well, number one, I don't think that Mr. Miller controls interest rates. But the other thing is, where I disagree with Mr. Miller, is that inflation is really only a problem because it erodes my purchasing power. And the people who would want to solve it would want to erode my purchasing power further by raising my taxes. That's kind of like giving poison to a dying man.
Let's get this straight, Mr. Gunn. Nobody on either side of the issue in this room wants to raise your taxes. We know that inflation has pushed middle-income people into higher brackets. We all want to cut taxes. What we want to do is cut it in a way that will help the society and keep the society on an even keel.
That's what Kemp Roth does.
All right, Mr. Rusher, one more question.
Mr. Gunn, I think we've already had from the representative of Big Labor tonight a whiff of the demagogic argument yet to come that this is a bill for the rich. What do you think this does, if I may ask you, sir, for the poor?
Well, I'm not interested in making rich people richer. I'm interested in making poor people richer. But if you have tax rates that are so high on rich people that it becomes more profitable for them to invest offshore or set up their plants in Mexico, then the poor people who have only their labor services to offer don't have anywhere to take them.
Mr. Schlossberg, one last question.
I'm fond of the name calling over there. Mr. Gunn, the former chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, Herbert Stein, under Nixon and Ford, said that there may be as much chance for Kemp Roth to boost government revenue and spur the economy as there is life on Mars. Logically, he said he would not seek a McDonald's franchise on the planet Mars. If I sought one as a loan officer of the Chase Manhattan, would you tell me that I have a friend at Chase Manhattan?
If you did, I didn't hear the question.
Try it again.
All right, thank you, Mr. Gunn. Thank you for joining us on the line.
I guess Mr. Schlossberg didn't have time to tell you that Mr. Stein on balance is, however, for the Kemp Roth bill. Remember how just a little over a month ago, the people who were opposed to the passage of Proposition 13 in California were telling us that the sky would fall, the chicken littles of tax rate reduction in California? Well, the bill passed anyway because the people of California had the courage of their principles. And it didn't fall. The sky is still there. The important services of California are still there, and they will stay there. What is happening is that the people are getting control again of their destiny.
Thank you, Mr. Rector. For those of you who may have joined us late, tonight's debate is about a reduction in the income tax rate. The question, should the federal government reduce everyone's income tax 30% over the next 3 years? Advocate William Rusher has just presented his case in favor of the proposal. And now advocate Stephen Schlossberg will present his case against.
The distinguished Mr. Rusher mentioned Proposition 13. I would ask the opponents where the $5.5 billion surplus that was in California is in the federal government. A great writer said 30 years ago, inflation is a tragedy that makes the whole people cynical, hard-hearted, and indifferent. Surely that is not true of Americans. But there is mistrust, a search for demons who keep us from buying the better life. Kemp Roth has found their demons. They blame the poor, the old, the sick, and the unskilled young. They say big government takes from us and gives to them. In my America, there is no us and them, that is only we. Their cynicism is dangerous, contagious too. Kemp Roth pretends that drastic tax cuts will multiply government revenue. When that fails, they would leave it to government, without any guidance, to cut services and levy new taxes. We would face a staggering national debt and a disillusioned society. Kemp Roth is nothing more than a something-for-nothing fantasy. Its hidden agenda is even more pernicious, the crippling of the federal government. I call as my first witness Professor Robert Dunn, Jr.
Mr. Dunn, welcome to the Advocate.
Professor Dunn is a professor of economics at the George Washington University and a former economist for the Federal Reserve Board. Professor Dunn, been some talk here about Herbert Stein, the Nixon Ford Council of Economic Advisors chief. He said, I wouldn't bet the nation's economic policy on the assumption that the Kemp-Roth tax cut will increase the revenue. Would you bet on that policy, Professor?
No, I would not. Herb Stein's a very good economist, and I'm inclined to follow his advice on this one. Those who claim that the Kemp-Roth tax cut would ultimately raise total federal revenues provide very little hard statistical evidence to support their views. If you try to chase down the assumptions that are necessary to get that result, they turn out to be a little tortured. As noted earlier, Representative Kemp himself cites a statistical study in his support, which indicates that in 1982, the federal deficit would be $33 billion greater with his tax cut than it would be without.
Now let's talk for a moment about the Laffer curve. You wrote an article, which many of us read, in which you called it a dangerous mirage. Now, I want you to talk to us. I know you're a brilliant economist, but I want you to talk to us in English so people can understand. We want to understand this very complex, complicated economic problem. And say it in English, please.
Mr. Gunn did a very good job of explaining what the Laffer curve is. The problem is that the supporters of the Laffer-Kemp position provide no evidence that this country's tax system is in fact to the right of that peak. It may be to the right, it may be to the left.
Mr. Dunn, what do you mean by to the right?
Well, that the tax rates are now so high that a reduction in taxes would have such strong incentive effects that it would generate more revenue. No evidence is produced to support that.
They base their claim really on the success of the Kennedy tax cut in 1964. They've said that over and over again. Why isn't that true?
The economy now is in a very different circumstance than it was in 1964. We are now 3.5 years into a fairly strong recovery from a recession. The inflation rate is not 1% as it was then. It's 8, approaching 10. Interest rates are very high. The federal deficit was very low then. Now it's $50 billion. There's no analogy between the state of the economy now and then. The nature of the unemployment is very different now from what it was then. The labor force is quite different. It's younger, it's less skilled, and it's more prone to unemployment.
All right, Professor, what happens to the nation's economy, in your view, if the Kemp-Roth tax cuts become law?
This depends in part on how the Federal Reserve System responds. If the Federal Reserve System takes a passive posture and holds interest rates about where they are now, in my opinion, one could expect a rather wild bout with inflation. I wouldn't guess how high
and
it would
tell
be.
Tell us what inflation means. We've heard here that it's something about dollars chasing goods. What does inflation mean to people in this room and to people in America?
Well, it means a lot of things. One, that people ultimately lose confidence in the currency and to some degree in themselves and in the country. Charles de Gaulle felt strongly that the soundness of a currency had a great deal to do with a country's self-image.
All right.
Mainly, inflation is a nasty, brutal tax.